Hey everyone, thanks so much for tuning in. Today I have Boldly Rudy. We have quite a few common interests, so it's going to be interesting to chat and see what he has to say today. So welcome, Rudy.
Thanks. Thank you so much for having me, Aiden. Honestly, I watch your content. This is awesome what you do with the podcast and everything. So I'm definitely excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, great. Oh, thanks, Rudy. Cool. Yeah, I just... because I've been Googling Baldy Rudy, and then I figured out like 2 days ago, it's Baldly Rudy, which kind of makes sense. It's like a clever little twist. So yeah, so it's Baldly Rudy. And so I wanted to jump in, like you and I didn't have this actually on the notes, so apologies, but you and I have a similar like entry into YouTube. I started in the olden days with toy drones, but then very quickly shifted into the camera scene. So let's talk about a little about that. So who, are there any like big YouTubers that got you into that?
So, my history is very long. I've actually been on the platform for 7 years.
Me too, same.
So, and it was actually not my idea. It was one of my best friends from college. He went ahead and said, hey, like, I'm going to start this YouTube channel. And essentially, he wanted to be the East Coast version of the Easy Allies. A lot of people, you know, they got a lot of influence from them. And he said, let's go ahead and do this, which we did. It was awesome. We started doing a bunch of reactions and covering like live events. After that, we... he left the channel two and a half years in for like personal and family reasons, which were totally 100% respectable. After that, it was my friend and I. And in 2022, we said, hey, we want to create things that aren't just reactions or covering whatever's happening in the gaming scene. Mm-hmm. So we created separate channels. I created Baldly Rudy. He created his own channel. And Baldly Rudy just took off way faster than I thought it would. And it's a lot of work on the tail end. You know how it is. It's a lot of work on the tail end. And it eventually started taking up so much time that I couldn't dedicate to the time to the other channel. So I told my friend, I was like, I can't, like, I don't feel like it's fair for me to, you know, not give 100% of myself to this. So I think I'm going to have to, you know, bow out and you know, gracefully give the reins to you 100%. And we still talk to this day. I left in December of last year, and now I do this not full time. It's not my full time job, but I do this as much as I can. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Interesting. So the YouTube efforts were never, you never did any camera stuff. That's just an interest on the side.
Well, this has always been like, I've always been into tech. I've always been into gear.
Okay.
My background is in marketing. So I've always been interested. Like the other day I was watching a commercial like on TV, and I was talking to my wife, and I was like, oh my God, like, did you see like the shot that they did for this car? Like it was so cool. It was a shot for an Acura commercial. Yeah. And like it was focused on the caliper of the brake. So like you could see the Acura logo, and the camera was spinning around with the tire. So the rim was spinning, but the caliper the was focused. I was like, dude, that was so cool. That was awesome. And, you know, my wife's like, you're such a nerd. But, you know, it is. You know how it is. You know how it is.
I very much know how it is. Like, like I said, I started with drones. And so it became a thing in our household, drone footage, because it was like right back when drones were still new. And then, like, there was, the transition in the film industry from helicopters to drones. And then it became just... like cinematic shots, and I'll be like, you know what they did there? The thing is, and then, then the color grade, that color grade, I'm pretty sure they use Blackmagic cameras or like whatever, I got really deep in the weeds with it. To the point where, I talk about a lot about this on the podcast, about having, being diagnosed with ADHD a little while ago. So like, I've been all over the place, and to the, like, I ended up directing, a little, local movie here in my town. So like I got so deep into it. Yeah, but the problem with being the way that I am is I get so into something. Like this is, I wrote a post about this. Like I work so hard sometimes, and then people go, wow, amazing, how do you do it? And then other times I sit around and do nothing, and everyone's like, what is he doing with his life? And so at that time I was so into cameras, like filmmaking and all that. And so the people around me were like, Joe, this dude should direct a movie. This is going to be amazing. And then I did it, and I was like, nah,
I'm okay.
Yeah, next thing. What else can I do?
Oh my God. No. Yeah, no, no. I 100%. I haven't been diagnosed with ADHD, but I 100% can relate to that because I've never had a traditional job. I've never had a nine. Well, I lie. After college, I had a 9-to-5 for 6 months and I hated it. I hated the corporate world. Didn't want to be a part of it.
Yeah.
And then after that, I was just constantly looking for something else to do. And, you know, in a perfect world, you know, what I'm doing on YouTube, that would be like my main thing. That would be awesome because I would be able to go ahead and actually express my creativity through the videos that I publish online.
Yeah.
But the channel is only a year and a half oldish, more or less. So it's, I was listening to another podcast and they said that you have to give around like 3 to 4 years of like constant like push for like most channels to get to that point where it's actually a sustainable income that comes in. It's insane. But yeah, agreed. I've jumped from industry to industry.
Yeah. I mean, everyone I talk to that feels like the right advice. I mean, because I've kind of gotten into a thing, like pushed hard at it for a year and then like gotten lazy, pushed, you know, so I've never really like succeeded on the platform. And this is the first time, like I looked last night and I'm pretty much right on 2 years now and I can really feel it. Like I can feel the momentum and I know that within the, in the next 2 years, just like you're saying, 4 years, within the next 2 years, it'll be like a sustainable income where I can probably employ people and all that. So definitely, yeah.
That's exciting. I mean, for me, like it's crazy because my dad, he's had a business his entire life. He's an immigrant and he came over here and, you know, he's always had different businesses after he graduated from college in the 60s. And like, he has always been, you have to go ahead. Like I told him, I was like, I'm thinking about doing this. And he's all like, well, if you do that, you're going to be self-employed and realize that if you're self-employed, you're technically unemployed every single day, unless there's income that comes in. And, I was like,
the stress.
Okay. You're right. You're right. It's stressful. I mean, I'm already bald. It doesn't matter at this point, but it's kind of one of those things where it's just like, all right, it's a perspective change and everything. Yeah. But no, I've always been into like handhelds and stuff like that. I mean, I have like a collection that's like right outside of the frame. I still have like my original DMG Game Boy, my Game Boy Pocket, Game Boy Advance. I have a couple of 3DSs, a couple of 2DSs. Like,
oh, wow.
Handhelds have always been like a part of me growing up. And
okay, cool.
The Switch was revolutionary for me, man. Like it completely and totally like changed the world for me because I was like, what the heck? I can be in a plane and I can play Breath of the Wild on the go.
Yeah.
Like so cool, man. So cool.
Yeah. It did change.
So it's just nice to have it on the go.
Yeah. People like love to talk badly about the Switch, but it literally changed the game. Like the history of Nintendo, like we get upset with Nintendo with all their lawsuits and that, but like almost every single device they've brought out has been revolutionary, like game changing. I mean, the 3DS, like what a device, and the games on it's like just crazy. The history of gaming is just crazy. It's insane.
It just sucks because it's extremely difficult to emulate, you know, in a handheld form because you have like the two screens that you have to like worry about. So in Jurassic, it's like you have to swap between the two or like have very small screens like on the screen itself. So, you know, playing that, like I was testing that out on, what was that? The R36S that I just finished like posting a video not too long ago about. And like, I was just like, how the heck is this even like doable? And some people do it. I'm just like, I would rather have dedicated screens. And like, I don't have it here. I think I have it downstairs charging, but I have, I just got the Aya Neo Flip DS and like, that is awesome. Like, I'm just like, oh, this is I got it to emulate 3DS and Wii games or Wii U games. And I'm just like, this is perfect for it. Like I would want this to be, you know, the go-to. Yeah. But it's have you gotten it yet?
No, I don't have any Aya Neo devices. I've been trying to emulate 3DS on the Retroid Pocket 4 Pro. And when I heard that they were going to boost the performance on this, I was like, perfect. I can do some really good 3DS emulation on here. But still, the game that I want to emulate is Sonic Generations. It's just the game I want to play, but it struggles, still struggles. Still can't get it to play perfectly. Yeah.
No.
So I'm busy. I'm busy. So I've got a 3DS, but the problem in South Africa is a lot of guys brought games from the States. And I don't know how they did it. Maybe they just kept buying games from the States because they were all locked back then and we couldn't hack them. So I'm going to hack this 3DS so that I can just buy whichever games are available. I can just play them and I don't have to worry.
It's the easiest thing to do in the world, Aiden. Like, you can knock it out in like 15, 20 minutes. There's a guide. Because at this point, like, the firmware support is done. They've finished it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's end of life. It's beyond end of life at this point. And I have two of them. So I modded one for my son, or hacked one for my son. And, like, we were just sitting there, and it was a 15, 20 minute process. There's a guide online where you can read, and it tells you exactly what to do. You pick the settings, and you pick the different unit that you have or the model that you have, and then from there, it's boom, done.
Yeah. It's all waiting. I know the websites you're talking about. I just need to just get my headspace and do it, because I'm excited about that. So my gaming journey is literally the opposite to yours, where I'm doing it all in reverse, like. I'm planning to get a Switch soon. Like, you know, that like, so I've gone backwards because, like, growing up, I couldn't afford any of this stuff. And, like, going to university, I put gaming and everything on the shelf. Like, I wasn't, you know, that's not something that I was doing. So now I'm like 40 years old and got a little bit of extra income. And now I'm like, okay. And then I started with the emulators because I wanted to play Famicom. I wanted to play some Famicom games. And then I found a clone at a local Chinese mall, and it just broke within a week, and I was so, like, pissed off. And then I discovered Anbanic, and so that's how all of this began. Yeah.
Nice.
So now I'm kind of doing it in reverse because.
No, go ahead. So you're doing it in reverse?
Well, I'm doing it backwards because I discovered the emulators, and then I was like, oh, hang on, but original hardware is still the best. And, like, I'm like, oh, but it's quite expensive. Okay, well, we'll work up to that. So I'm kind of doing, like, so. Yeah. I don't know if you saw my video, but I did my very first Game Boy I bought, like, a month ago. Like, I played it when I was young. Like, friends had it. I remember drooling over the thing, but never had one. So now I've got my own Game Boy.
Oh, man, that's... It's amazing because, like, I grew up on a farm. I'm originally from Puerto Rico. I'm not originally from Florida.
Cool.
I grew up on a farm in the mountains. And for us, you know, we didn't have a lot of disposable income growing up. And even moving to Florida and my dad having his business and my mom working full time, we still didn't have a lot of disposable income. So it was one of those things where, like, you know, I remember having a job at the beginning of, like, the PlayStation 3 era. And, like, if you look at my collection, the majority of the games are PS3 because I was like, I have the money now. I can buy the things that I want. I can do it now. And, you know, here I am, still a college kid, still, you know, doing everything. But it was one of those things where I was just like, yes, now I can go ahead and do this. But in hindsight, like, now that, like, you know, I know more people online, I've, you know, my friends, you know, I've talked to them and everything, and they're like, there's all these classics that you missed out on. I just recently finished Final Fantasy VII for the first time in my life, like, to prep myself up for Rebirth that just came out recently.
Okay,
and
cool.
Part of me is like, I can't believe this game came out when it did. Here I am playing it almost 30 years later. But also it's one of those things where it's like, this is amazing that this came out at the time that it did with the tech that's there. And then I'm still able to play it today with the tech that's available now. It's insane. It's insane. So now I have the modern hardware, but, you know, I play mainly on my Steam Deck. Like, that's my go-to for a lot of things. Pair that with Emu Deck, and, like, I'm a happy camper, man. I'm 100% satisfied with it.
Yeah. So, it's just so funny, like, talking about your like, growing up, and then you, like, move to the States, start earning a bit of money. I'm like, I'm getting everything. It's just like,
I'm buying it all. Oh, man. It's so much fun. And, like, there was a GameStop that was nearby. And I don't know if it's EB Games over there or not, but it's like, at that point, I was just like, dude, I would buy everything used. Like, I still have copies of, like, because I still bought stuff on, like, PS2. I still have, like, the original, like, Final Fantasy X and X-2 that's, like, sitting there. I have, like, I mean, just Katamari Damacy, like, We Love Katamari, things like that, like, all sorts of, like, these obscure games, Shadow of the Colossus, which is by far one of my favorite games ever. I mean, there's just so many titles that, like, came out around that time that I was like, this is like the new media, you know? And I still have that conversation with, like, some of my colleagues at work and whatnot, that I'm just like, guys, like, you know, you watch The Last of Us on HBO or Max or whatever it is. That's what you guys have been missing out. Like, that level of storytelling, you guys can go ahead and experience that. It's all available go to it. Just do it. Man, like I love gaming in general.
Yeah, man, I agree with you. Why not? Like I say, I've been doing it all in reverse. And so I missed a huge portion of this. So like, even when you talk about Final Fantasy, I don't have any experience with it. So there's a bunch of games that I'm getting into and discovering it. And like, I don't know what happened, but I just skipped the whole thing. I played a bit of Xbox with my friend in university, but I just, I was poor, man. Like I had no money. So, so I'm experiencing it now. And I agree with you. The storytelling, the storyline isn't amazing, but someone recommended Bioshock. And that's an
Bioshock's
old game.
Bioshock's amazing? Like, what? Dude, Bioshock's amazing.
It's crazy.
Are you playing it right now?
Yes. And I just can't believe, when did it come out? It came out a long time ago, and it's just so good. Yeah. It's exceptional.
It's so good.
It like set the bar 100%. After that, I'm sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, you know, I remember playing that, and like, it's the beautiful thing that I love about gaming in terms of like storytelling is that it's not only like verbal with dialogue, it's also atmospheric. So like when you go into Bioshock, for instance, like there is a sense of wonder, there's a sense of mystery, and there's a tinge of horror that's there because you're like, what the heck happened here? Like, what is going on? And like, I'm getting chills just talking about it, but it's just like, it's so exciting. Aiden, I'm excited for you because Bioshock is it's a classic. There's so much that's we're gonna have to talk after you finish the game.
Okay,
because,
cool.
Like, dude,
cool.
It is so good, Aiden. So good. Yeah, I love it, man.
Yeah, yeah, and all sorts. Like, I bought a game called What Remains of Edith Finch, which is a very slow moving, like, sort of mystery. Like, it's a walking sim, and you just walk through. Mm-hmm. Oh, do you know it?
Oh yes.
Okay, cool. Okay, yeah, I'm a bit like shy to tell people because I loved it, and I don't think everyone thinks it's amazing.
Really?
But, yeah.
I think the
comments I saw
amazing.
Online were the comments were like the people who loved it were like, this could be the best game, my favorite game of all time, and then others were like, this is just weird and dumb. Like, so.
Well, it's like, you know, for me personally, I'm open to anything because, you know, you'll see a review on Metacritic and you'll get the game and you'll play it and you'll realize, wow, this actually isn't as bad as people make it out to be.
Yes.
And there are some instances where I 100% like get that. Like, I think on PlayStation 3, I played Heavenly Sword, which if I remember correctly, that was Team Ninja, which is a very, you know, they're very much focused into action games. And the story was okay, but I absolutely loved the experience of playing this game and going all out and kind of having these crazy bombastic action sequences. But there's other titles, you know. Oh man, I can't even think like off the top of my head. Like, I played Viewfinder recently. My son's into puzzle games, so absolutely loves Portal 1 and 2. So I ended up playing Viewfinder, which is kind of like in that same vein without the humor. It's much more serious. Okay. It's about trying to find a way to fix climate change in the distant future and whatnot.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool.
It's super crazy because, you know, you go around with like a Polaroid. Have you seen the demo for it?
No.
Oh, dude, it's so cool. So you use the Polaroid to take a photo, and it essentially copies whatever it is in the photo, and you can move that Polaroid around, and you can place it into the world, and it just replaces whatever is there with whatever's in the photo. Super cool stuff. It's like not expensive. I think it's like $7 or $8. It's a short game. It's like 3 hours, maybe 4 hours.
Yes,
but
I
the
like
puzzles
this.
Are really well done. I like stuff like that. That, like, you know, if somebody comes up to me and is like, "Hey, listen, like, you should probably check this out." I mean, I'm going to go ahead and do that. There's another one that's in the same vein as What Remains of Edith Finch that's called, I think it's In an Eye Blink or something like that, where like it's better if you have like a camera to watch you, because essentially the game goes ahead and passes time as you blink. It's super crazy in terms of like a premise, but it's as like a dad, you know, I see that and I'm just like, holy crap, like time passes like that. And there's this metaphor that's obviously beneath all that, but you see time just pass. Like, your kids, they grow up so quickly, and, you know, all of a sudden you look back and 15, 20 years have like passed by. It's a lot of heavy stuff, and it's not for the general public, because I feel like most people, they want stuff like, I don't know, like Stellar Blade, for instance, that's coming out in a few weeks.
Okay.
They want big action, bombastic explosions. And I'm just like, I like a good story.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. I do enjoy it. Yeah, I'm really enjoying just discovering all these games. Okay, so allow me, because you seem to have a good knowledge of games. What I'm just going to grab my Steam Deck. What's on your Steam Deck right now?
Right now?
Don't make fun of me, Aiden.
Don't make fun of me. But right
Why would I do that?
I have Signalis, which is kind of like a... this is kind of an old school... top down, not 100%, it's almost isometric, but not really. Uh-huh. It's inspired by the original Resident Evil 1 and 2, but okay. Also has like touches of like Silent Hill if you're into horror. Obviously, as you can tell, Fallout 4, because the show came out recently, and I don't know if you've seen any episodes, it's amazing.
I just downloaded Fallout 4.
Yeah! Oh, really? Oh, dude, you're going to love it. And like, there's so many mods that are out there for it, too. Obviously, the viewfinders here, Kentucky Route Zero, which is one that I've been meaning to play, Dave the Diver, Thronebreaker from like the Witcher series, Final Fantasy VIII, which was my first Final Fantasy. And then there's obviously Final Fantasy VII, Portal, which is there. And one of my favorites, Baldur's Gate 3. I mean, this is like my main go-to for like a lot of gaming, just because the battery life on the OLED is stupid good. I don't even care about the performance. Yeah, it's insane, man. Like, so I got the Steam Deck and I loved it. But when the OLED came out, I was kind of skeptical, but I was like, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to go for the limited edition model and I'll just get it, come in and do a review about it. Yeah. The battery life is double or triple what I experienced with the original Steam Deck. And I'm assuming, marketing background. To me, it's the more refined APU that's there. So it's 6 nanometers versus 7. And then overall, just it's more optimized. The level of performance is the same, but the battery life is just amazing. So when you're playing, when you're emulating on here and you're playing something from like the SNES era, which was one of my favorite eras growing up, you can play for 6, 7, 8 hours, like no problem at all.
Wow.
Like you'll be fine. It's insane, man. Like I absolutely love this thing.
Wow. That's cool. Okay. Well, I bought, Tech Dweeb's, it's the top of the line LCD range before the OLED came around. So it's a 512 etched glass. I've modded the back. I put the see-through back on, but, battery life is pretty bad. But I'm gonna Velcro a battery here and then just boost my battery life a bit.
Yep, that's what I used to do. Like, I have a crap ton of batteries that, like, sponsors send me. Like, I have this recent one that just came out, and it's just, like, it's, like, the size of like, a candy bar. So you can just literally plug it onto, like, the back of it, and you can just let it sit there, and you don't really have to, like, worry about anything.
That's cool.
It's cool stuff. I mean, you know, it's just, like, keep on gaming.
Hey, what's that? You just keep on gaming.
Yeah, it's just to keep on gaming, man. Keep the battery life going and everything. So what do you have on your Steam Deck?
I've always wanted to play NBA 2K. So I did download it, but I removed it because it's 100 gigs. It's so huge. I think that's one of the reasons why people gave it such a bad review. The reviews are atrocious on Steam. It's got terrible reviews. Mm-hmm. So Bioshock Remastered. Let's try to see if I can.
Yes,
Bioshock Remastered there. I've got Edith Finch, which I've removed. I love Doom, so I play that regularly.
Yes.
Okay, what's done? But not all these are downloaded. Terraria, which I'm just trying. A friend recommended it. Bellatro for my wife. I don't see the appeal, but I think she really likes it.
I haven't tried it, but apparently it's amazing.
Yeah. Everyone's into it. Death Stranding was the first game I bought. So I'm working through that. No. I've removed it from the Steam Deck for now because I'm playing other games, but I'll get back to it soon. Fallout 4, about to start that. So I'm putting Bioshock on hold to play that. Forza, because it's my favorite car game. Skull, because I love platformers. And then The Walking Dead is my like favorite game of all time.
Nice. Is that the Telltale series, Walking Dead?
Yes. Actually, that's the first game. I bought that, and then I bought Death Stranding.
Nice. It's... Death Stranding, it's a very divisive game. I personally enjoyed it. Love the music that was inside of it. It's all licensed music for the most part, but the music and like the experience that was there, the storytelling, very cool. But you know, I never played the Telltale series of Walking Dead. That's one of the ones that I do want to go ahead and go to because I bought a PS Vita, and it originally came with a bundle that came with the first season. So I was like, I can, and I never got past like the first section of the game. Please don't hurt me, Aiden. Yeah. But it's like, I want to.
Same here. I got it on my iPad, and I also didn't get past the first, because I'm a huge Walking Dead fan. Like, that series is like my all-time favorite TV show. And so when I found the game, I thought, this is so cool. I can keep enjoying that whole vibe. But for some reason, it takes a while to get into. I'm not sure why, but like about 2 years later, I found it on Steam, and now I'm hooked. It's like the Walking Dead show, but more immersive. Like, the storyline's just as good. I love it. It's really good.
That's, I think, beautiful. It just takes a while to get into. That's the beauty of video games. What's up?
Yeah. I think it just takes a little while to get into. I think that's probably why you haven't gotten past that first bit. Because the first section's really slow and like janky. And you're like, oh, I don't understand what I'm supposed to be doing.
But that's the beauty of like the medium in gaming overall, is that like you can tell a much more immersive and deep story in comparison to just having something that's like passive, like watching a television show or watching a movie or a film. It's just, it's completely different. I was going to say, if you like philosophy, I would recommend Nier Automata, and it runs decently well on the Steam Deck as well, but it's like, it's an action game. So it's an action game, but there's philosophy behind it. And if you do play it, when you beat it, boot it up again. And you're going to do that a couple of times before you actually get the full story. It's really, really done, man.
All right, I'll look it up after this. Okay, cool.
It's also somewhat depressing, if I'm being 100% honest with you, but it's a good story.
Well, it's philosophy.
It's very morbid, very stoic, but it's there.
So you're the first person on the show that's not like fully in the retro gaming scene. Well, not the first person, but... like you talk a lot about the Steam Deck and you talk about Windows and all that kind of stuff. And so I wanted to like hear your thoughts on like Steam Deck. This is very like sort of reductive saying this, but Steam Deck versus Windows handhelds, like where do you think that's all going? Do you think there's a future in the Windows handhelds, or do you think Steam Deck's just going to like outlast them all?
I think in my completely unjustified, unprofessional opinion, I think that it really depends on the person. So I have two Steam Decks. I have the ROG Ally, the Legion Go, the iNeo Flip DS is running on Windows. Okay. And I have the MSI Claw as well. All of them, it's Windows in a handheld. And that's the thing. It's not really about the handheld itself. It's about the OS that kind of pushes me towards the Steam Deck camp. Because I love the ease of use of being able to go ahead and use the Steam Deck, boot it up. Everything's there. The boot up process and actually playing the games, you're very quick to get into it. And I don't know if you've noticed this, but a lot of these Windows handhelds, they have Windows running. And then once Windows boots up, the automatic startup after that is the front end that these companies have designed. So Asus has their own MSI Claw, or the MSI has their own thing. Same thing with the Legion Go. Yeah, so they have their own thing. So there's there's pros and cons to it. The pro is that you have the flexibility and versatility of Windows. So you can play all of the games that are there, whether there's anti-cheat software or not. And a lot of these developers, they develop these games to run on Windows, obviously, because Steam Deck uses Linux, and there's the Proton that's there that goes ahead and, you know, allows for that those Windows games to run on Linux.
Yes.
You kind of have to, you know, there is going to be some differentiating factors between the two. But at the end of the day, what I've learned as I get older and as I get, I try to say that I get wiser, but we see. As I get older, I try to go ahead and realize that I want a better experience more than anything else. That to me is more important than, you know, like the difference in terms of like, for example, the Baldur's Gate 3 running on the Steam Deck versus the ROG Ally is anywhere between 5 and 10 frames per second. That's the difference between the two. So as like somebody that's an avid PC gamer, if your main core focus is frames, that's all you care about, is you want frames more than anything else, go with the ROG Ally.
Yeah.
But for me, I'm playing games like Signalis. That's literally like it's almost like a PS1 era style game. So you look at that, you look at Viewfinder, which is a puzzler, Fallout 4, which is old as heck, but it's still good. Dave the Diver, like all these games that I'm playing on here are older style games, if not older games. If they're modern games, like, for example, Pizza Tower, for instance, which is fantastic. If you like the Wario Land and like Wario Land, like 1, 2, and 3, like that style of like platforming, you're going to love Pizza Tower. It's amazing.
Okay, cool. Things like that. I've seen it there. I just haven't.
Oh, yeah. The style is weird. I'm not going to lie to you. It looks like somebody was tripping on something when they designed the aesthetics and everything for this game. But the gameplay mechanics are there and they are solid. My son and I love the bejesus out of it. But I look at the form factor. I look at the experience. And that's why I push people more towards that, because this is the closest that a PC can get to a Nintendo Switch-like experience for the common user. If you're a hardcore user, go with the ROG Ally, go with the Legion Go, and any, like, I wouldn't recommend the MSI Claw right now. Maybe, you know, in 6 months when, like, the drivers are updated, because performance is not that great. But yeah, that's how I fall on it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I tend to agree with you because I think, like, I think, you know, with consoles and all that kind of thing, I really feel like we've peaked. And there's not, you can see by what PlayStation and even like the delays with Nintendo, I don't think they've really even sure where to go now. And so, like, I think that's where the Steam Deck came in and Valve came in. They were like, there's so many cool games for people to play. They don't need the fastest machine in the world. They just want to play these games and they want it convenient. And that's where I feel like the Steam Deck just is the best thing right now. Like you say, if you want a full-on console replacement, maybe get the ROG Ally. But it's still going to be fiddly, and there's going to be little tweaks here and there. But yeah, like here's my take on it. Like, because I'm very new to this. So like my YouTube channel is like, hey guys, I know nothing. I'm going to get into this and follow me on the journey. That's kind of how I do things.
That's okay.
And for me, like, I can hand this to my wife and say, hey, play Balatro, who she's like anti-gaming. She was raised to believe that gaming is like evil. And so for her to pick this up and go, oh, cool, I'm playing. Like, there wasn't even like a learning curve. She just started playing. She started tapping the screen like a tablet. She cradles it like a baby. She holds it in bed like this. And she goes,
just like a tick-tick. That's so cool.
That's so cute. Anyway, so I'm slowly but surely converting her. The next thing I'll show her, Edith Finch, and see if she likes that.
And that's the thing. So, like, you know, my wife, she started out as like a PC gamer back in the day, and then she stopped playing. And then, like, when I remember when we first moved in together, I had a PlayStation 2, and I was like, hey, play Final Fantasy X. And it was like this like amazing experience, because it's a love story. Let me be honest with you. It's a love story more than anything else. And there's a bit of tragedy. I mean, most Final Fantasy games are a love story and full of tragedy. So if you like that stuff, Final Fantasy is for you.
Cool.
But, you know, she fell in love with that. And then after that, she was just all like, what's next? What's the next thing that I'm going to play? And it became this like, okay, well, you know, now you can play this. Now you can play this. Now you can play this. And like, I remember this past summer, Final Fantasy 16 came out, and it's very divisive in the scene, because you have some people that are like, this is an action game, because you have developers from Devil May Cry, developers from Nier Automata, all of these like developers, they all like team together alongside with Yoshi P, who's in charge of Final Fantasy 14. And you have all of these developers that come together, and they're like creating this masterpiece, this magnum opus. And like, I fell in love with it. I thought it was an amazing experience. I love the game. If you like Devil May Cry, you're going to love this game in terms of like gameplay. But the story is there. And I remember, like, you know, I was sitting up here and I was working on stuff for my job. And like, I could hear like the music, because she was playing downstairs. I could hear the music was playing, and I was like, ooh, she's getting close to the end. Like, I know this song. So I go ahead and I peek out, and she like looks up at me, and she's like in tears, because there's like a really emotional moment that happens.
Yeah.
And she's like, and I'm just like, oh, so cool. Man, like, yes. That, like, but because it's such a like tight and emotional moment. And like, we still think of it now, because this week or next week, the last DLC comes out. But like, the story is so impactful and the music is so good. And those are the experiences that I cherish.
Yeah.
Like, Aiden, I like, more than anything else, I want to go ahead and share these experiences with other people that are impactful. And I think, I don't know if you agree with me or not, but I feel like as somebody that is growing up I feel like we are shaped by the experiences that we have. And yeah. whether they're through media, whether they're through books, whether they're through, you know, experiences of day-to-day lives, or the video games that you play. And I think there's a part of me that's like, I want to experience, you know, the original, like, for example, Golden Sun. I only played the first one. I didn't play the second one. These retro handhelds are a great opportunity to experience some of those titles that I missed out on in my childhood because I just couldn't afford the games. Like, I remember the first time that I played Metroid, Super Metroid, there's this old chain. I don't even know if they're still in business. It's called Albertsons. And I would go in and it was $5 to rent the game and then $1 to renew after 5 days. So it was $5 for the first 5 days and then $1 after that. And you just keep on renewing. And I remember, I think I spent like, I don't know, like 10 bucks. And as a kid, like that was a lot of money. I was like, this is so expensive, but it's good. Yeah. It's so amazing. And I loved it. I loved it. Now it's like an adult. I'm like, dude, I can beat this in like 4 hours. Like it's not a long game, but as a kid without the internet, you know, and I feel like these games, they make us who we are. And I think of it as like an experience that I can share with someone else. And I'm like, hey, like this is an experience that I had an emotional time with. Like, I have my first Metroid game was Metroid 2 on the Game Boy. And I remember seeing, did you ever play the game by any chance?
No, I didn't.
No. So there's like this part in the end where like things happen and you're just like, what the heck? Like, what is going on? And then I played Super Metroid, which is technically Metroid 3. And like from there, you have like this whole like, it's not long, but it expands the story and the implications of what happened in Metroid 2. And I'm just like, whoa, my mind was blown as like a kid. So it's like all these like little moments like build up to like other things. And I don't know. I want to share that with other people. Like all my loved ones, I'm just like, please play this.
Yeah. Share those stories. I'm trying to think of what Metroids I have played. I'm a huge fan of Metroid Prime. I love that game.
Oh, yeah.
I really want to play it on the Switch. That's actually like my motivation to get a nice Switch is because I want to play that. And whatever. I've played some of the platformers, but not all of them. I do find them a little bit confusing. So the older ones. Yeah. So I've played I haven't played it all the way through because it's just so long. The 3DS one. What is it? Samus Returns, which is really nice.
It's a remake of Metroid 2. So like if you don't want to go back to the original Game Boy, which in my opinion is kind of obtuse and it's because of the coloring on the screen, it's very easy to get lost. A lot of things look the same.
Go with
the 3DS remake. It's much better in my opinion.
Okay, cool. The Samus Returns.
Oh yeah, 100%. Like it's just a better experience. And so the developers that made that ended up making Metroid 5, which was the most recent one that came up, Dread. I freaked out when that came out because I was like, dude, we've been waiting almost, I think, over a decade since Metroid 4.
It was a big deal.
So like, I was like, what? This is amazing. Blah, blah, blah. So definitely really cool. The same, they have a lot of like similar mechanics in terms of what Samus can do. And there's a lot more like, there's a parry system that's built in. It's a little bit more.
Very good.
I don't know, just rudimentary in comparison to Dread, but that's just me.
Yeah. So you enjoy Dread because I've played a little bit of Dread and I was pretty captivated by it. It's really good.
Oh, dude, I loved it. Like I'm a Metroid fanboy just because like that's just like my first like major franchise that I love. I mean, I don't know if the camera will pick it up, but I have like a Super Metroid poster back there. Like I absolutely love it. It's like it was one of like my favorite things growing up and like I love Metroid Prime 2. I got the trilogy for Wii, which is awesome using like the hand controls and everything. But I'm just a fan of gaming in general. I'm platform agnostic. Like, you know, that's one of the things that I don't know if you see that on Twitter from time to time. There's like so many fanboys that like come in for like different camps. And I'm just like, guys, like just, you know, play the game that you want on the platform that you want. And as long as you're having a good time.
Yeah.
Does it matter?
Well, it comes from your background. You start earning money. You're like, I want all of the things and nothing's changed. You still want all of the things. You know?
Give it all.
I just like to have a good time. It's all new to me
and I'm loving it. Yeah.
There's so many. Let me know because I will literally just be like, play this, play this, play this, play this. I have many games I can recommend.
Okay, cool. Yeah, well, it's becoming like a thing with the podcast because I spoke to, you'll see the episode launch later after we chat. I chatted to someone, her name is Crystal, a new YouTuber, and she's just getting started. And she was sending me like, because she's also deep into game. Like when we were chatting, she's like, yeah, no, I'm also just experiencing for the first time, but I kind of figured out she's actually got a pretty good gaming knowledge. So she started sending me games. So it's becoming like a thing. Aish from Retro Handouts also recommends games on a regular basis. He's the one that got me into BioShock. Yeah.
Oh, good on him. Yeah. Kudos, because BioShock is so freaking good.
Yeah, his gaming knowledge is exceptional. Like, if you ask him about a game, like very similar to what you're doing now, where he'll be like, yeah, well, the developers were so-and-so and those guys got involved and there was a bit of a fight, but you know, like he knows all the things. It's really cool. Yeah.
Yeah, man. It's you know, because of me being on like that other channel that I was on, we were constantly like looking at what was happening in the industry and what was going on. So it was like, it was almost looking at everything with a fine tooth comb. So I,
yeah.
Not to say that I didn't have any other choice, but I really didn't. I wanted to be on top of everything, and I wanted to learn what was going on and what's coming out on the horizon. So understanding like where the developers come from kind of gives you an idea of what the game is going to be like in terms of like mechanics, because I feel like developers, like artists, because they are in a sense artists, they have their own fingerprint in terms of like their developing style and the gameplay style and the mechanics that they put into games.
Yeah. Well, so to go back to Death Stranding, I want to move on to retro gaming, but I just want to talk about this
quickly. I'm sorry.
No, it's cool. I mean, you know, you say a thing and then I'm like, oh man. And then I want to talk about it. So driving in the car this morning, I give a lift to these two girls down the road, and I was telling her a little bit about some of the games I'm playing, and then we got onto Death Stranding, and I said, yeah, you know, it's a bit of a pretentious game. And then I, like, because I'm kind of making excuses for the game already, because I know how people react. I'm like, yeah, it's very weird, you know, you're basically just walking around all the time, and then these big sort of like gooey blobs jump out, and they're actually spirits from people who have died, and they come back and they like fight you. And she's like, that sounds really cool. You should let me play that one day. I was like, okay. So clearly these guys know what they're doing, you know.
It's cool. And I mean, Hideo Kojima, the director behind it, I mean, it's the same guy behind Metal Gear. Like he's a visionary, 100%. So and you can tell that he comes from a background, well, not from a background, but he always wanted to be a film director. So a lot of the cinematography that you find within the game has a film background in terms of like the execution and how it's portrayed. So I'm very much, you know, I went into the game expecting Hideo Kojima, and it was a very Hideo Kojima game. It's weird in its own way. I would implore you to play the game and experience it for yourself, because I also went in on the Steam Deck expecting it to, you know, run like crap, and it actually ran really well. And a lot of people, like you mentioned, didn't speak highly of it, but I was like, you know what, like, I'm gonna give it a go. I'm gonna experience it for myself, because I like forming my own opinion on things. So yeah, man, go for it. They're right.
Yeah,
the people that you gave a lift, they were right.
Yeah, because there's something about putting headphones on and playing that game, like just the whole, I think that's where he is a genius, is that whole sensory experience. Like that first song that plays when you, the first time you go out walking, there's a song that they play. And I still have it on my playlist on Spotify, because it's just like that whole feeling of first playing that game is just wonderful.
Yeah. It's amazing. I love the OST in there. So chill.
Okay. Retro gaming.
Yes. We need to talk about that.
Yes. So, I mean, you've clearly reviewed some retro games. How deep are you into retro gaming now? Because I've seen a lot of Steam Deck content. That's mostly what pops up now from you, probably because that's what I'm Googling. But how many sort of retro game devices do you have? The emulators?
So if I were to consider it an emulator, I would probably say like around 20. I want to say like 2025. The thing is, okay. So Aiden, here's the thing. I'm into it. The only thing is that I don't have enough time to pump out the content that I want to make.
Okay.
That's the problem that I have. And, you know, we've kind of talked a little bit about this, about like, you know, how I like to produce these like really high quality, you know, B-roll and all this and that.
Yes.
And that's the problem. Like I have literally right next to me, it's been sitting here on my desk the entire time, the Pow Kitty RGB 10 Max 3. It's been sitting here. I've been wanting to go ahead and do a video. I haven't even unboxed it. It's still in its nice box. Behind me, there's like a table that's over there. I have the Retroid Pocket 4 Pro, which I took to, with me on a trip. And I absolutely like, I was like, whoa, this is like mind blowing what it can do.
You like it? Cool.
Yeah, well I love it. I think it's amazing. I think it's good. Like, I'm also like, I marvel at the tech that we can, that we have in our hands. I'm just like, this is mind blowing to me because my, you know, I'm 36 now. My 16-year-old self wouldn't even have imagined this. My 6-year-old self wouldn't have imagined this. Like, this is insane what we can do with these handhelds. So I'm very much, I'm an optimist, and I'm very much a I try to see the good in all of this. But yeah, no, I have, what else do I have? I have two Miu Mini Pluses. I have Mini V4, RG35XX, and the Plus, two Pluses, 1H. I have so many different things, and it's just like, this is exclusive for your podcast because I didn't talk to anybody else about this, but I was planning on like hacking this guy, a Leapster GS from Leapfrog. Yeah. So I have this old guy just sitting there, and I was going to sit here and like, you know, hack it so that I could go ahead and run ROMs and get RetroArch running on here. But the thing is that a lot of the files that are on GitHub are specifically designed to run on Windows 10. I do not have a Windows 10 device. So that was a brick wall that I ran into on things, which sucks. Okay. But, you know, I'm sitting here and I'm like, I think I have like an archaic laptop that's sitting around. It might be Windows 8 and I might be able to upgrade it to Windows 10. Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of handhelds that I have. I just don't have the time to dedicate to actually creating and pumping out these videos. And when it comes down to it, you know, is the zeitgeist, is, you know, the information that like the content, is it going to be too stale to push it out? And this is more like my YouTube side of thing coming out, but like I recently did the R36S, but this was because I did the RG35XX Plus and the H and like installing Garlic OS 2.0 and all this and that, and people are like, the R36S is better. And I was just like, what the heck is it about this handheld? Like, I want to check this out. I want to learn more about this. And it's kind of like this conversation with the audience and like them being like, no, like, you should check this out. And I'll like look at it and I'll be like, whoa, this is awesome. And then they'll be like, no, but you should check this out. And I'm like, whoa, this is really cool too. Like, everything's amazing. But I don't know, man. It's exciting. So exciting. And the channel started out doing like news content. And then I reviewed the Nintendo Switch OLED. And then I saw Wolf Den. He posted something about the RG35XX. And I was like, this is cool. Like I like, this is like a wave of nostalgia just came
it's amazing
over me.
Yeah.
And it's awesome. So I like, I'm somewhat newish, but I'm still like discovering things, and I'm primarily a Windows user. So like learning like the Linux side of things is a whole other ballgame entirely. So like you, I'm like, I don't know anything about this, but this is cool. I'm going to find stuff out and I'm going to talk about what I found out.
Okay, cool. That's what I'm doing with a Steam Deck. Like I'm like more deep in the weeds with the emulators, but with the Steam Deck, I'm kind of going that route. And also the OG, what's so unique about my channel, and like it feels my Game Boy video is slowly, you know, some of those videos that just suddenly like pick up, and it's because there's not a lot of people who are 40 years old and have never played a game. Well, have never owned a Game Boy. And like, if you watch my video, I'm literally like a child. I'm like literally saying words like yippee and yay. And, you know, I'm just so excited, you know? I think that's quite special to watch and to experience together with audiences. So I think the same thing applies to you with the emulators. I think the retro emulation scene is very welcoming. Like, in every scene, there are the like sort of assholes who will say horrible things, but like mostly they're just going to be like, look at this guy. He's so happy. And they'll be like, and in the comments, they'll be like, you know what? You should try this with it. Very often I'll make a mistake in the video. I'll say something wrong. And instead of the guys going, you're an idiot, they'll be like, you know what? You should also try this. I think it might be better. And then I find out they're just being polite. I was just full on wrong in the video. So yeah, very nice community. I don't think you must be afraid of putting out content that's stale. I think everyone will welcome you.
I appreciate that. I mean, honestly, it's it's this weird thing because my wife, you know, I love her to death. She has been 100% supportive of everything. And, you know,
yeah, that's,
I don't really have like anyone else that I can talk to about this because my other friends that, you know, run their channels, it's a completely different type of content, entirely different. So, you know, I try to like brainstorm with them from time to time and we'll like, you know, either talk online or like meet up for coffee. And it's just, it's completely different, you know, in terms of like execution. So it's like, they'll tell me things and I'm like, like you should do this and that based off of like what I know and what we used to do together. But now I'm just like, but what do you think of like this and that and that and that? And they're like, dude, what? So it's a completely different like world entirely. Exactly.
Yeah, because when you start telling like, especially like PC gamers about these devices, they're like, I don't understand why there are so many and why anybody cares. Like that's the first response. But then you give one to them for a week and then before you know it, they're in the rabbit hole. So
it's insane, man. And then I've seen that in the comments where people would be like, oh, I just bought this and it's like, it's an amazing experience. And then, you know, because it, like, and again, this falls back to like, you know, talking about the Steam Deck versus Windows and like getting the best FPS out of something. So like I'll post a video and they'll be like, why does this device, you know, it's coming out in 2024. Why does it have DDR2 RAM in it? What? I don't get it. And it's just like, dude, the games that run on it aren't meant to like, you know,
forget
like
about the specs, play the games.
Exactly, man. It's and that's like, again, it's more about the overall experience that you get gaming versus, you know, all the latest and greatest tech.
Which, sorry, I'm segueing out of retro gaming again. I keep like mentioning the Steam Deck, but it kind of is a similar mindset to the Steam Deck because the Steam Deck has kind of also taken that. It's gone like, screw the specs. Let's just make games work nicely and make it a fun experience for people. And that's that. I think that's why I love this retro scene so much because, okay, one thing is there's so many devices coming out and it just seems to be no end. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. And the other is like, it's just so comforting to play these old games. Have you played Darkwing Duck for the NES?
No, I haven't. Not on any of the new emulators, but I remember that I rented it when I was a kid because my parents, they gave me a Nintendo. And it came with, I still have the cartridge. It's it's a double cartridge where there's two games on it. And it was Hogan's Alley and Duck Hunt. And I have Super Mario Brothers, Super Mario Brothers 3. And what was the other one? I think I have Dick Tracy and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the arcade edition 2. And so like all of those were there. I never played the original Metroid. There's so many like classics that I missed out on, but I remember like going to Albertsons and renting some of the games that were there. And Darkwing Duck was one of them. But that one I did, I'll be honest with you, Aiden, that one I did not extend. That one I just did the $5 and I was like,
Come on.
I'll bring it back. So I have to replay it. I did. So I reviewed, there's this local company. It's called the Arcade Guys, and I did a review of like one of their cabinets. They brought it over to the house. They gave it to me for like a week to like review and check out, and I played Darkwing Duck on there, and I was like this is good. Like it, you know, it's nostalgic vibes that you get out of it, you know.
All right, correct answer. I mean, so there's some NES games. So I had a Famicom and they were like, I don't know what happened in South Africa. I haven't done the proper research on this, but I feel like, because we had like, I'm sort of slightly just post apartheid. Like I grew up 93, 94 is when apartheid ended, but we had sanctions. So a lot of companies weren't selling stuff to South Africa. So, I feel like maybe we didn't, because I don't remember ever seeing a Nintendo in South Africa, like an actual Nintendo console. So anyway, so at school, these Famicoms were going for super cheap. It was a little bit after the whole NES craze. And so I got that. And then someone bought me Darkwing Duck for my birthday. So I had like a you know, one of these 101s with Duck Hunt and all those games. And then I had Top Gun and I had Dark. Okay, that my audience are sick of the story by now, but I had Top Gun and I had Darkwing Duck as like cartridges. And I said to Crystal in the previous episode, I started this wanting to play Top Gun and Darkwing Duck. That's how I started this whole scene. And Top Gun is atrocious. Just like download the ROM, try it out. You'll see what I mean. It's just a terrible, terrible game. Like, and I loved it. I played it for hours. Like, I played the game through. I finished the game. I loved it. And so I was so excited to start this emulation, and it's just absolute rubbish. It was so terrible. But anyway, Darkwing Duck's the opposite. It's just so good.
Oh, yeah. It's still up there?
Yes. Well, it's you know, not a lot of these licensed games are very good. You know, like a lot of the Disney games are you can see that it was just a money grab. It was just, you know, they threw money at a studio to just make a game. And Darkwing Duck was just, had such, like the characters were good. The artwork is really, really good. Whoever made it put a bit of love into it, you know.
That's good, man. That's good. Yeah, that's one of those things where, like, you know, I've, you know, you have like these memories, these core memories of like your childhood playing like these video games.
And that's
you,
what
like,
it is for me.
And you're just like, oh my God, like this is so bad. Why am I playing? Why did I love this game?
Why did I love this? Yeah.
Why did I love this? But, you know, when you're a kid, and I feel like, you know, there was, and this is more like PS1 SNES era, like 16-bit and around the mid-90s. I feel like around that time, the internet wasn't everywhere. You know, not every house had a computer that was connected to the internet.
Yeah.
And I feel like, obviously, I don't know how it is in South Africa, but here, like, you know, there was a time where, like, dictating or trying to figure out what to buy would be based on whatever was said in a magazine, or if the cover looked cool and, like, you read the back and you read, like, the synopsis on the back and you're just like, this is awesome. Like, I want to play this. Yes. And, like, now we're... It's the curse of knowledge, I think, is what it is. Because now, you know, we have Metacritic. We have all these reviewers that are, like, putting out whatever it is that they say about whatever game. So it's like your situation with, like, What Remains of Edith Finch or, like, Death Stranding, where it's just oh, like, people have said that this is bad, so it's probably a bad game. And then you go and you experience it, and you're just like, whoa, like, no, this is actually amazing. This is actually a really good game. And... you know, it's Final Fantasy VIII is a really good example, because that was my first Final Fantasy, and I freaking love that game. It's flawed as heck. If you ever play it, the junction system is so broken. Like, you can literally cheese the game very early on. But now it's like, I know that it's broken. I know that it's flawed, but I still love it. I still have, like, there's so many, like, core memories that come from that game. And there's other games like that too, that I, you know I have the original, like you mentioned licensed games. Like, I have the original, Aladdin and Lion King for the Super Nintendo. And, like, those games are notoriously difficult, but I remember beating them. I'm pretty sure that the batteries are dead in there.
Huge amounts of time.
Crazy amount of times, but I got that precision platforming done to a T. So it's just, it's crazy how nostalgia works like that, where, you know, something that you thought was good isn't really that good anymore.
Well, we played Aladdin, I still enjoy. We played Aladdin and Lion King on Sega. Like, Sega was huge here, bigger than Nintendo. Mm-hmm. And I opened up Lion King the other day again, and I don't know, they are good. They're just a little bit too difficult. Like, you know, I think with our modern gaming, like, just storyline kind of just flow with it, easy gameplay, we get a bit frustrated with these more difficult older games. But that is part of the joy of it, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, back then it was just, it was designed to, you know, increase game time as long as possible. So it was... I mean, I don't know. I loved it. I thought it was awesome. But I was always, speaking of Sega, I was very jealous of, like, anyone that did have a Sega, because was like, it was like, what was the saying that Sega does what Nintendo don't? Like, that was like their tagline back in the day.
That was it was.
And I'm just like, dude, like, this is so cool. You have like Sonic, you have Golden Axe, you have, like, all of these titles that are there. And again, this is me, like, not being able to experience it as a kid, and because of, like, these retro handhelds, I'm able to go back and be like, oh, so these are the games that people talked about. Let me go ahead and check them out. So it's very awesome.
Called it Genesis. We called it Mega Drive.
Mega Drive,
And I'm like, how was the 16-bit? Like, it's so good. Like, really, really good. Yeah. The guys really milked those 16-bits.
Oh, dude, it's like, it's an amazing, I mean, that time for me, I feel like that time and probably, like, the next generation was probably the last generation where, like, things really just were 100% focused about gaming, and there was less stuff about, you know, polishing it for the general public. Because I feel like so again, paying attention to the news and everything, Sean Layden, who was the ex-president of Sony Entertainment of America, he said that there's going to be a bubble, that eventually these games are going to get so big in terms of like budget that it's just, it's not going to have like an ROI in the business sense. And business, you want to minimize the amount of risk. So when you invest hundreds of millions of dollars into a game, you want to guarantee that you're going to make hundreds of million dollars of millions of dollars back. So there's a lot of games that, you know, come from a creative aspect, which is why I love indies. Because indies, there's no overhead, you know, oh, we have this ceiling that we have to go ahead and hit, you know, in order to actually make money and be profitable. And it's part of the reason why I love, you know, studios like Larian Studios that came out with Baldur's Gate 3. There's like, you know, Supergiant Games, like things, studios like that, that just, they focus on making a really intriguing, interesting game aspect. And I feel like that era, the 16-bit era, 8-bit, 16-bit, and I guess, you know, the PS1, N64, Sega Dreamcast, like that was like the last era. There was a little bit left during like the PS2 era. But after that, it's just, that magic is lost. Am I like insane saying that, Aiden? Like, I feel like the magic is somewhat lost at times.
No, I agree with you. I agree, but... So, I mean, I don't know enough about the modern gaming scene, but what I'm picking up, like, was it you? No, it was someone else who also does like the Nerd Nest guy. He does news release stuff. And he was talking about the new Star Wars release and how it looks incredible, but there's so much they have to do to try and make their money back. And it starts to get frustrating for people playing the game. And that's like you're saying, like it takes away from the magic a little bit. It's like, okay, I'm a huge Star Wars fan and I saw some screen grabs. I was like, take my money. But it's a big debate because, you know, you've got like Edith Finch, which is an indie game, which is just magical. Like I played it. I felt like I was in another world. And then, you know, I have downloaded like old AAA games and I'm like, there's just no heart or soul behind this. So,
yeah, I agree. Total sidebar. I just thought, have you ever played the game called Gone Home?
Gone Home? No.
So it's similar. It's kind of like a walking sim in terms of like What Remains of Edith Finch. In terms of like design and everything, it's not as robust, but there is a pretty good story that's in there. It's 2-3 hours tops. I'm pretty sure it's on the Steam Deck if you want to go in and get it. I recommend it. You'll enjoy it. I think it'll be fun. But yeah, cool. No, I agree with you because come on, we can all go and like take like a photo. It'll be awesome. Blah, blah, blah. Very nice guy. Very humble. Yeah. Very humble. And like playing those games, I loved it because I grew up on Star Wars. Like that was like, my dad is not a big sci-fi guy, but he'd be like, oh, like I heard these are good. And I ended up loving them. And it was just an awesome experience to share with my dad. And, you know, Fallen Order, it felt absolutely amazing. I recommend it to anyone. But Outlaws it feels like a typical Ubisoft game or Ubisoft. I don't know how to say it, where it's like, it's just an open world. They said that there aren't going to be any towers that you have to climb in order to expand the map, that it just expands as you go. I'm assuming that that's a critique that a lot of people gave them, especially with Assassin's Creed in general. But it's like in order to get the full experience, you have to pay like $120 USD. Like, what?
That's a lot of money.
I'm sorry. That's a lot of money, man. And there's like some people that are like, okay, that's like a week's worth of groceries for like a game.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry. It's crazy. I'm going to go ahead and just, you know, skip it and get it on sale. That's what I'm going to do inevitably, is I'm going to get the complete edition when it comes out on sale.
Yeah. And that is the problem. It isn't interesting. So from the outside perspective, coming in now and experiencing it all as a consumer, because I don't really do the Steam Deck for the channel much, but as a consumer, I'm like, I'd rather buy these older games that are just as nice to play. Like, why? I'll wait later when it gets cheaper, you know? So
exactly.
There's the diehard fans that are spending the money, but like $1,200 is my year's Netflix subscription, which I get just as much joy out of, you know? So like,
dude, it's crazy insane. Money. And like, I look, right. And I'm just like, you know, I have Fallout 4 for PlayStation 4, I think. And I rebought it on the Steam Deck just to have like that flexibility of being able to like take it on the go. And I bought it for like $4 or something like that the other day. It's on sale right now. So it's just like, that's why I bought it. If you want to experience older titles that are known as classics, just buy it on the Steam Deck. Buy it on Steam. It'll be on sale.
Yeah, man.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just a different world entirely, man. But I
agreed.
I look at like, you know, what's considered retro now, because I'm old. We're old guys.
Yeah,
what is
retro? You know,
what is retro? I'm retro at this point, but it's just like, I feel like at this point, like I can just play, you know, a title from like the PS1, PS2 era on like a reasonably decent handheld. And like, I can really relive some of these classics or experience titles that I missed out on. And having that is really, truly the coolest thing of like all of this. And I don't know for you, like this channel overall is a great excuse to like buy tech and like just check it out. Cause I love tech in general. So it's just like a great excuse to just be like, what do they say? It's, cause when it was all like pure video for me, it was like, gear acquisition syndrome. Yes. So it's just like, I'm like, great. I have handhelds and like, I'm like, no, honey, I'll talk to my wife. No. This is for the channel. Like, don't worry about it. I'm going to make a video on it. And like 50% of them are just still sitting here. But so,
you're giving away our secrets, man. Literally everyone watching this is like, this guy needs to shut up right now.
Oh my God.
Good times. Cool. Okay. We'll bring things to a close with like, I think most people, I'm not going to go through all the questions because I think we've answered most of them, but the one that I can think of that a couple of people asked was like, the fact that you're a dad I think you mentioned you're married, a husband, and, how do you balance it now? Because you also mentioned you have a day job. How do you figure all that out? Because I'm figuring it all out as well. So I think all the like creators out there are quite keen to hear you answer that question.
That's a hard question because like I'm still figuring it out myself. My cadence in terms of like posting content is not like I see like Russ, Stubbs, Tech Dweeb, like all these like amazing content creators. They post so frequently and so often. I'm just like, how the heck do you guys do it? You know, I do a lot of research. It usually like in a perfect world, I would be able to knock out like a video 7 days maybe, but I like to dive deep into it, experience everything that I can out of it. I usually have like a Google Doc and I'll like type up all my notes and all of like, my opinions and everything like that.
Yes.
And once that's done, I record here a roll and I'll just, you know, have everything going and I'll speak my mind out, my guts out. And then based off of what I say, I'll get another section in that doc and I'll say, these are the B-roll points that I need to go ahead and get to support whatever it is that I'm saying. Yeah. There's a content creator that I followed a long time ago, and he's a content creator for content creators, essentially. And he said, you're better off showing it, not telling it. So whenever I say something, if I can find some or I can create some form of footage that supports whatever it is that I'm saying, then I'm going to go ahead and do it as much as I can. Yeah. What I've noticed, and this is more of like the analytical side of things, is that a lot of people like top down footage that kind of like vibes well with kind of like having like a top down and kind of like talking about different things for the handheld itself. But I still love getting phenomenal, like amazing B-roll, at least in my opinion, in terms of balancing it with like life and everything. It's I was listening to a podcast where Matt Pat from Game Theorists and they have a bunch of like theorists and whatnot. He's a big YouTuber.
Mm-hmm.
They're retiring, and him and his wife said there is no work-life balance. There's only work-life integration, and that's what worked for them. Obviously, for you know, when we were talking, we were supposed to schedule things earlier. And my wife was like, that's okay. I'll take, you know, the little guy to school. And when you said we can do it later, I was like, perfect. Then everything works just fine. But there's a nice understanding on her part that like, this is something when things happen, like there's just situations where things have to go ahead and happen. For example, in September, I'm going to a conference for video creators in, I think, Dallas or Houston, Texas. I don't know. It's in Texas.
Okay.
And she's like, I understand that this is something that you want to do because this is going to better your content creation and your channel overall. I really genuinely think, Aiden, that having people in your lives, in your life that like understands what it is that you're doing and kind of understands that you have a vision for what you want this to be, like that, that's kind of like the big factor. A lot of content creators, they're solopreneurs in the sense that like, it's just them. They might have like a team behind them, but for the most part, it's just them. And being a dad in the midst of all this is great because I have all this stuff and I could like show my son and be like, dude, like, let's check. That's why I have two Miu Mini pluses and two RG35XX pluses. They're sitting there because it's like, oh, we can play Pokemon together. We can, you know, play these games together and share these memories that I had. And, you know, he loves it because he gets to experience some of those titles as well. And like, I could be like, oh yeah, like you should do this and that. And like showing him how, like, for example, like in Super Mario Brothers 3, where you like get under the white block and you like hold down and eventually you get behind everything and go into a secret area at the end of the level.
Yes.
Like little moments like that, where it's just like, you're teaching another generation through a new medium, a new sense of like experiencing things, but it's also like, you know, you're reliving and rekindling your own nostalgia and sharing that with someone you love. Like and I could just say, yeah, man, like I'm playing video games with my son and I'm having a good time. But also in the back of my mind, I'm like, oh, okay. So I realize that, you know, in order to get, you know, a net play to work together, I need to do these specific steps. And I keep that in the back of my mind so that when I actually go to record, I have that experience and that knowledge to go ahead and present it as such. It's weird, man. There is no work-life balance for me.
Integration. I like that.
Yeah. It's integration. I like it. It totally works. That and a lot of coffee.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's similar for me, I think. Yeah. It's interesting that you say that because like, I love the fact that my son loves the retro games.
That's good.
Oh, crap. He actually we don't like them on screens too much. And he, just before I went on the call, he's like, oh, Dad, can I play on the blue game, the RG556, the Amanic? Because he's figured out you can play Android games on there and he likes, Dead Cells and stuff like that. So it brings me a lot of joy, but if I leave him alone, he will just play for hours on end.
Yeah, that's my son's the same way. If we leave him alone, but it's crazy because I don't know how old your son is, but mine's 8. And
my boy is 9 now.
So he's into Minecraft on PC as well.
Okay.
And like, he's learning how to code Java because he's like, I want to learn how to do this stuff. And I'm just like, I was like, yeah, man, like, that's fine. Like, not a big deal. And then like, I think it was Friday, we came home after after school, and I was, cooking. I cook a lot at home. That's like one of my favorite things. Long story short, COVID, bottled me up inside. I'm a bit of a foodie. And then I started cooking a lot at home because I wanted to recreate some of the dishes from like some of the restaurants that I have, and a bunch of blogs popped up and I love it. So anyways, so I was cooking and then I go up to let him know that, hey, like, the food's ready, blah, 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 blah. And like, I see him with like a freaking like coding window, like having like his day at it. And he's like, oh yeah, like, Dad, look, like I did this and that. I'm like, how the heck are you doing this at 8? Like,
that's insane, what? Dude,
wow. It is nuts. And I'm just like, there are other kids that like play these games and like, they're like, I want to learn how to change it. I want to learn how to like mod things. And like, it's crazy, man. The future generation is, it's like, it's so intriguing, like what they're going to be able to do.
Mm. Yeah, it is incredible. Wow. Sheesh. Well, it feels like we need to bounce ideas off each other from time to time.
Let me know, man. I mean, I'm always up for anything at the end of the day. Like, I feel I without getting like too deep into it, like I believe in karma. I believe that like, putting good out in the world will bring good back my way. So if you ever need anything, dude, hit me up. You got my deets. Set something up.
Cool. Thanks, man. Yeah. Cause, like you say, that's one of the reasons why I started the podcast is this does feel a little bit lonely at times. I mean, like,
agreed.
It's wonderful, like the way you're explaining your relationship with your wife, and it's similar for me. Like, it's lovely having someone in your corner like that. But, at the end of the day, it's just you on your own creating this little thing. And, I don't know. I do find that. I find sometimes I just feel like no one really gets what I'm actually doing, So, it's nice to have people to bounce that off.
I agree with you 100%, because like some of my friends, like my college buddies that have nothing to do with YouTube, even some of my colleagues at my job that have nothing to do with YouTube, like, like I was doing this and that and blah, blah, blah. And they're like, it's either two reactions. It's like, this guy has a YouTube channel. And then there's the other side of it where it's just like, what the heck is wrong with this guy? Like, what is he talking about? And they don't understand it at all. They don't understand it at all. So, for me, it's very much like, you know, my wife, she has a graphic design background. So she understands like some of the elements in terms of like making sure that things like look good and like understands like the elements of like a thumbnail. So she gets it. She has a creative soul. And I think my son does too, but it's like, it's one of those things where like even talking to them, like it's just, it's, they don't, I, my wife is there. She experiences almost everything that I experience with like the channel and everything, but she doesn't 100% see it. It's like a 60 to 75, maybe 80%. Like she kind of gets it, but she doesn't get it 110%. And I think that's just, that's just the luck of the draw, man. Like Aiden, I'll be honest with you. That's just how it is, man. Like it sucks. Mm. It's lonely, but not. Because even though I'm in Florida and you're in South Africa, we can still talk to each other and like brainstorm, you know, make stuff happen.
Cool, man. Cool. I'm going to quickly do like a little official sign off and then we can say goodbye. Cool. Well, thanks so much, Rudy. That was really incredible talking to you. It's like I say, it's incredible just like speaking to people other side of the world who have very, like we have very similar experiences of life and of like how our brains work. So yeah, thanks so much for being on the channel.
Thanks, man. I appreciate your time. Thank you for having me on. It's honestly, it's an honor to be here, man. I appreciate it.
Cool. Thanks, man. Cheers.
Cheers.